Turn your Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Today we're going to be studying a text. It's a once-off message. We're starting a new series next week, but this is sort of a once-off or a single message. We don't do many of them. But we're going to be talking about the Shema. The Shema is the most recited passage in the Bible currently today. It originally started as Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6, and it just used to say, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." Later on, it got extended to the whole of Deuteronomy chapter 6, or not the whole, chapter 6, verse 4 through to verse 9, and eventually, I think it was chapter 9 or 11, parts of it was added to it. But the Jews recite this, even to this day, I think twice a day. And there are some great lessons that we can learn from this text regarding parenting. Now, if you are single or you're married without kids today, or in some situation where you don't have children, you think, how does this apply to me? In two ways you'll see it apply to you. One is will become clearer towards the end of the message. And two is that the principles that it teaches is not only for parenting, but in any one or any way that you want to help someone become a Christian. So as parents, what we want to do is we want to be able to help our kids know the Lord. But as disciples, we also want to help our neighbors and our friends know the Lord. Now, this is mainly addressed for the help of our children, but really as you look at the principles, you see that they are generic and that anyone can learn from it. So we're going to take a look at five things that we can learn from this. And I've taught this in different settings with family and youth, with some of the couples with younger children, but thought this is so necessary for us to be able to let this become a part of who we are as we learn from it. Now let's read together there from Deuteronomy chapter 6. We'll read from verse 4. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your homes and on your gates." Okay, we're going to unpack this thing. Number of lessons we can learn here. Now, to just give you a bit of history, Moses is basically recapping what's happened to them over the last 40 years. That they were all in Egypt, God saved them out of Egypt, they're about to go and enter and fight for the promised land, and he's saying, now, I want you to think about this as we do this. Think about these things, and he gives them these different lessons. Now, the first one, and he doesn't word it this way, but we'll word it this way today, is number one, is always keep the end in mind. Always keep the end in mind. We need to focus our priorities, he is saying to them, on what matters most. And what matters most, in verse 4, he tells me, he says, "Hear, O Israel," meaning don't forget this, guys. Remember, as we're going to fight to get into this land, remember the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Another translation translated as saying, the Lord is our God, the Lord is the one and only God. In this one sentence, Moses establishes a frame of reference for everything else. And in this one sentence, he says, that frame of reference is one thing. It is God Himself. And he begins the passage by reminding the Israelites what their life and faith is all about. And he's saying, guys, remember this. Your life and your faith is all about God. And as we raise and teach and train our children, we need to be parenting them from that perspective that everything is about God. Life is not about where you live. Life is not about where your kids will go to school or what kind of education they'll get or what job they'll land one day. Those things are important, but it's not what life is about. Life is about God. Moses is saying it doesn't really matter what our kids know if our kids don't know what really matters. And what really matters is God. Wouldn't it be heartbreaking if our kids go to the right schools and we stay in the right neighborhoods and we drive the right cars and they get the right education and they land good jobs and even have good friends, but at the end of the day, they do not know God. Therefore, he is saying to them, guys, remember what matters. And what matters is God. It is so easy for us today to let what is temporary drown out what is eternal. And it is our job as parents to parent from that single-minded perspective. The Lord, He is God, and it's all about Him. The Lord, He is one. What does that mean in a practical sense? It means that we need to align our whole lives to God. I mean, the key things in our life is where we work. Let me write it down here. We work, live, and play. Have fun. Socialize. So it says, where we work, we need to figure out, where do I need to work? Well, how does where I work align with God? Where I work, the place where I decide to work, where it is located, how will it affect my relationship and my children's relationship and the people whom I reach out to? How will it affect their relationship with God? Where I live. That we need to make the decision where I live will be instrumental about my relationship with God and my children's relationship with God. Do I stay close to other disciples? I know in some cases someone might be married to someone who's not a Christian and you don't necessarily have a say over where you live. But for a number of us, we do have a say over where we live. Do I live in a way where I say, man, this and you, where I live is going to be instrumental for my own faith and the faith of my children? We're living at the best place. The schools that my kid go to is not because I like the school or because they've got the best educational system, but the schools that I've picked is most instrumental in the ability for me to help my children know what matters most, and what matters most is God. Where I play, my relationships, my friendships, the friendships that I have, is it aligned to help me and help my children to know what is most important? What matters most is God. Think about time. Things that are most important to us is time. What else? Money. We cannot deny it. People hate talking about it in church. I really don't mind talking about it at all. Time, money, and energy. Okay. My time. Do I spend my time in a way that would align myself and my children with God? The way that I choose to invest my time, it's a treasure. It's something that we cannot, once it's gone, you cannot have it back. My money. Well, bend this one. Sometimes we want to bend it, eh? But my money. Is my money, can my kids see that my wallet is connected to God? And that I'm spending my money, it's not just, I don't tithe, it's not something that I just give money. It's as I look at my money and my budget and the way that how will it align me and my family. Most to God. Yero Israel, the Lord is one. My energy, where my energy again is connected to God, where I don't just pour out everything elsewhere. I don't just pour it out on my hobbies and pour it out at work, and when I get home, there's no more energy left for my wife, no more energy left for my children, no more energy left for God. He's saying, listen here, we've got to keep the end in mind all the time, the end in mind, the end in mind. I want to change jobs. The end in mind is God. How does it affect it? Where do we live? We want to move. The end in mind is God. How does it affect it? Where we want to play, the end in mind, the time, the money, the energy, everything is aligned. Keep the end in mind. He is saying to them, we are entering the promised land. We are going to new and great things. Keep the end in mind. The end is God. That's what we need to teach our children. That is what we need to teach our friends. That it all aligns to God. The second thing that we can learn here is in verse 5. That is that we need to fight for their hearts. Now again, whether this is your children or a neighbor that you're reaching out to. We need to fight for their hearts. Focus on the word heart. Verse 5 says, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. I'll read it again. It's a very important word here. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. Love the Lord your God. Now, prior to this point, the Bible often speaks about God loving people. And it speaks about the need for people to love people. But prior to this point, the Bible does not speak about people loving God. It speaks about God being feared, God being revered, respected, and worshipped. In Exodus 20, verse 6, God briefly mentions that to 1,000 generations, He will bless those that have loved Him. But this is the first time ever in the Bible where someone actually calls people to love God. What is Moses trying to teach us through it? Moses saying to them, from now on, they should move from being a people who simply obey the rules to a people who would have a love relationship with their God and Creator. They need to move from, it's best, I feel a little bit like a school teacher, but try to put that picture out of your mind. We need to move from people that obey the rules to people in relationship. That's the call that Moses is doing. He says, love the Lord. Previously, it was just about respect and reverence and worship. Love the Lord your God. He's establishing, one could say, a new commandment that supersedes all other commandments. This new rule implies that something is more important than the rules. And he's saying what is more important than the rules is a relationship with God above all else. I think Moses was warning the people about the danger of passing down rules without relationship. See, we cannot just always expect our children to obey the rules because the rules are logical or because they make sense. Now, at times, there is the call for that. Why should you do it? Because I say so. But logic and reason can be debated. But you cannot debate a trusted relationship. We must fight for their hearts and not only their sense of reason. Moses told the Hebrew families that a day would come, actually, later on, believe it or not, a day would come in their lives, and for you, if you have children below 13, that day would come. If you have children 13 and above, the day has most probably already come. But there would come a day when the children would ask, why the rules? This he said thousands of years ago, Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 20. He says, in the future, when your son asks you, what is the meaning of these stipulations, decrees, and laws the Lord our God has commanded you? He says, believe it or not, a time is going to come, a day is going to come, when your kids are going to ask, why do we need to do all of this? Why do we need to go to church? Why do we need to love people? Why do we need to be righteous? Why do we need to stay away from sin? Why all these things? Why do we need to do this? Why is this happening? He says, now when your children ask you that, Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 21, he says, tell him, your son, if he asks you, why are we doing this? Tell him, we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt. Meaning, you think you're a slave because of the rules? You have no idea. Mom and Dad, we used to be slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt. But the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Before our eyes, the Lord sent miraculous signs and wonders, great and terrible upon Egypt and Pharaoh and his whole household. But he brought us out from there to bring us in and give us the land that he promised on oath to our forefathers. The Lord commanded us to obey all these decrees and to fear the Lord our God, so that we might always prosper and be kept alive, as is the case today. And if we, my son, are careful to obey all this law before the Lord our God, as He has commanded us, that will be our righteousness. He doesn't really give him an answer to the question, does he? It sounds more like a timeless story of what God has done and what God has been to them. He's not giving them the practical reasons. He's giving them the why. And he's saying the reason why we do this is because God saved us. The reason why we do this is because God can be trusted. And you, my son, think this is hard. There was a day where mom and dad lived as slaves in Egypt. We were beaten day by day, and we cried out to God. And God came, and with a mighty hand, He saved us out of all of that. He brought us into the desert, and for 40 years in the desert, He protected us from our enemies. For 40 years in the desert, He gave us food every single day. For 40 years, we learned this one thing, my son, that God can be trusted. That God takes care of His people. That God loves His people. That God saves His people. And the reason why mom and dad obeys what God says, even to this day, is because we know God saves. He saved us back then. He saves us today. And God can be trusted. Shouldn't we do the same thing? When our children or our friends ask us, but why do you do this? Why do you adhere to everything that God teaches? Why are you in the Bible every day? Why do you hold up these standards of God? Why do you live as foreigners in this world where you're in this world but not of this world? Why do you do it? And you say, because God saved me. Because my life was a mess. It was heading to destruction. It was in destruction or heading there. But God came and with His mighty hand, He saved me from my sin. And my son, not only did He save me back then when I became a Christian, but He saves me to this very day. The reason I do this is because God saved me. And God can be trusted. This coming January the 15th, I would be a Christian for 18 years. As I look back, the time has flown by, those 18 years. And often when people ask me about my Christianity or when I teach on it or talk about it or what have you, it's, so what has the 18 years been like? And for me, the 18 years has been nothing but up and up. There's been ups and downs in my life, but not ups and downs with God. With God, it's always been the up and up. There's been times of despair in my life and times of discouragement in my life and times where I didn't enjoy life. But God was always on the up and up. For 18 years, God has been with me and walked with me. And you know what? He did it even before the 18 years. And I can tell you that God has saved me. And God can be trusted. God is faithful. He has never left me. He has never forsaken me. Friends have disappointed me. I have disappointed friends. My family has disappointed me, and I have disappointed my family. But God has never disappointed me, because God is faithful, and God can be trusted. We have to go for their hearts. We have to help them focus on who God is, and not just what God expects from us. He's a God that saves, a God that can be trusted. A God that loves them, adores them, and desires to have a relationship with them. That's why my son, my friend, my daughter, my brother, that's why I live this life. Thirdly, is you've got to make it personal. In verse 6 it says, these commandments that I give you today are to be upon, and here's the key word, your hearts. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. You want to know how to pass your faith onto your children? Moses gives us the answer. He says, make it personal. The commandments that I give you today, Israelites, they should be on your hearts. Don't miss the contagious nature of your faith. Your faith needs to be in your heart before you'll be able to get your faith into the hearts of your kids. You have to live it to give it. It has to be in you before it can be in them. We have to look at ourselves before we look at them. Now, I don't think he is in any way suggesting that we be the perfect parent or the perfect model of obedience before we're able to pass along our faith. Otherwise, we'll never be able to pass along in any way or manner. But I do believe what he is saying is that we should have a passion and a desire to do so. Our children and others, for that matter, need to see in us a desperate want for a relationship with God. They need to be able to see us go after our relationship with God with everything that we've got. They need to see that we live before an audience of one and we pour out everything for a noble performance before Him. We make it personal. They need to see that. We must show them what it's like to pursue a relationship with God. Not a perfect relationship, but an hot pursuit thereof. We need to show them what a heart for God looks like. What it looks like to prioritize Jesus above all else. We must show them what a godly, loving marriage looks like. We must show them what it looks like to reject materialism and consumerism and live as foreigners in this world. They need to see you and me struggle with answers. They need to see us face weakness and deal with real problems and admit that we are wrong. So often I sit with my kids and I say to them, this is where I've blown it today. And I'm very specific. And they ask me about it. They ask me how it's going with those things. They even pray for it. It's a little bit embarrassing sometimes. So, yeah, I pray for Dad to be patient. Yeah, God, please do. But what they do know is that I want to be different. And I'm trying to be different. And I'm asking God to help me be different. And I'm asking them to pray for me to be different and for them to help me to be different. They need to see us, brothers and sisters, fight for our marriage. They need to see that mom and dad want to spend time together. They need to see mom and dad fight to have date nights, fight to keep their relationship alive. They need to see us fight to resolve personal conflicts. Sometimes we treat our children like their furniture. Meaning that we'll drive away from church with them in the car, and then we'll say in the car, I cannot believe so-and-so said that to me. I cannot believe church went over time again. I cannot believe we sang that song again. I cannot believe that one gave me the evil eye. As if they're not there. And because they don't comment, we think everything's cool. They're sitting there thinking, okay, that's mom and dad for you. Are they making it personal? It's going to be hard for them to make it personal when they don't see us making it personal for ourselves. They need to see God work in our lives. They need to see not a perfect marriage, but a changed marriage. They need to be able to see mom and dad move. This is where we are maybe, as Minnick said, and there's a million-mile mark in between that thankfully for God's grace He helps us. They need to see us not make the leap. They need to see us make that change. They need to see, well, my mom and dad used to be here, but today they're there. And 10 years down the line, they need to be able to say, I remember my mom and dad being there, but today mom and dad's there. In their relationship, in their marriage with us, in their materialism, in their consumerism, and how they align those things where they work, live, and play. I can see it has completely changed over time, incrementally, but it has changed. I can see mom and dad as a growing faith. I can see they have a passionate love for God. They need to see our intimacy with God, friends. They need to see our community as a fellowship and how we live in community. And they need to see our desire as we want to influence those that are far from God. Not in perfection, but they need to see it's something that we desire and we go after. We've got to make it personal. Number 4, in verse 7, we need to create a rhythm. Now Moses gives us some great advice here. In verse 7 he says, impress them, these commandments, on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. Moses is saying that we need to be very intentional about the job at hand. In other words, we can't just wish for our children to know God or hope that our children will one day know God. He says we have to be intentional about our children knowing God's ways. About a month ago, I read a book called Revolutionary Parenting. And I started reading it Friday night, I think around about 10 or 11, and I ended up reading about three quarters of the book because it was so moving. And what these guys did is, first time I've ever read a parenting book of that nature, what these guys did is they actually did a study on what they call what makes children spiritual champions. In other words, what they did is they interviewed kids in their mid-20s. They were highly involved in church and God's work. And try to figure out what role did their parents play in them getting there. And they interviewed 10,000 children and then their parents. So you get a pretty clear picture. And it talks about a number of things that played that role, and you might want to get the book to read about it. But I'll tell you at least one. And it said this. What all these kids had in common and their parents had in common was their parents were intentional. Since their parents decided to live for one thing, and that was to teach their children about God. That they decided to change the career that they had, 10,000 of them, to make sure that the career that they had, that they would have enough time to be able to teach their children about God. But it was their life mission. Let me be intentional. Let me live. They saw it as the purpose of their life. The purpose of my life is to, and that 18 years, pass the baton well and be intentional as I teach my children. We have to figure out how to transfer our faith to the next generation. We need to be intentional about impressing who God is and what He expects from us on a daily basis. We need to be intentional about teaching the children, and we need to be intentional about it daily. A relationship with God is not developed in a day, but a relationship with God is developed daily. And we are the ones responsible for our children. Often through the years, what I've heard is that people would say, well, man, it will really help my kids if the church just put on a better Sunday program, if the Sunday message was just more relatable to the kids, if the kids' zone was just different, if there was just a better youth program. If that would happen, then my children will come to the faith and they'll know God and they'll do well and everything would be okay. Now, there's some truth in that, and one of the things that we try and do as a leadership team is, and different groups of people is really to try and excel in those areas and do them better. But if you think about it, think of how, as a church, how many hours a year we have with your children. Let's say in a year, 50 weeks, we have an hour with them. Now, we're not even taking consideration holiday or they're sick and lame or lazy or whatever. Let's say we as a church, in the kids' zone, in the youth ministry, whatever, we have 50 hours with your kids. What can we do with 50 hours? Do you know how many hours you have with your children between mom and dad? Plus minus 2,000 per year. What we want to do is the church is going to change my children. If the church would, for 50 hours. But 2,000 hours, we goof off at home. And when our children struggle in their faith, or our friends come out of church and they don't like what they see, what do we blame? We blame the 50 hours. And we don't look at the 2,000 hours. We need to create a rhythm for those 2,000 hours. And Moses gives us great advice as to how to. He says, talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. Children work best with routine. And he says, get them in a routine where you can talk about it. Talk about it when you sit down. Talk about it when you walk along the road. Talk about it when you lie down and when you get up. What we try and do as a family, and different things works for different families. I'm not saying you should do this, but I'll just share with you what we try and do. As we try and have family devotionals, and we're working at having them more regularly, most probably a great ideal that we are working towards is now our children are young, so we're realizing that we actually need to repeat the family devotional twice for them to, we cannot introduce so many new concepts. So what we'll do is, let's say we have a family devotional on Sunday, then we'll have the next Sunday, we'll have the same family devotional. Now, our children are young, they're sort of very cool about the things that we do. And then the next week, it's a new one. And then the one thereafter, we do the same one. But the kind of things that we would do, and this is completely age appropriate, and I won't suggest you do these things with the teenagers. I don't think it's going to work. But the kind of things that we'll do, and I think I've shared some of this, but we'll take a passage like, take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. And we'll stand in our passageway, and we'll read the scripture, we'll stand in our passageway, then we'll take a little rubber bouncy ball, and we'll stand on the side of the passageway, and then we'll throw down the, let it bounce around the passage, and it's bouncing completely out of control. And we're saying, this is an out of control thought. In other words, I'm not going to be obedient, I'm not going to listen, I don't want to do that, I don't want to be friendly, I don't want to hug, I don't want to respect, I don't want to be interested in people, what have you. There goes the thought, now you go run and you catch it. And then they run down the passage and they catch the ball. And then we take toilet rolls and we pack it up like this and it's the Jesus tunnel. And I need to throw the ball into the Jesus tunnel and make it obedient to Christ. And when the ball comes out of Jesus tunnel, it is an obedient ball, a loving ball, a caring ball, a happy ball. They enjoy it. Again, I don't think your teenager would like you for it. But when your kids are my ages, about 4 to 7, they're kind of cool with that. One we did last week is that we look at 3 scriptures that talks about be kind and compassionate, Ephesians, and 1 Corinthians talks about love is kind, love is patient. We ask her, which word do you know see repeat itself in the passages? Let's go kind. Okay, today we're going to talk about kindness. And then we say, okay, who likes presents? Obviously, love presents. And so we have all these little presents for them, but it's small little things. It's like a sweet that's wrapped up and a little crystal that's wrapped up. And then we have the presents, and then they need to guess what's inside. And so they look at the present, oh, I think it's this, oh, I think it's that, I think it's that. And they obviously rip it open, oh, you know, it's this, and they're so happy. And then we take the second one, and oh, they rip it open, I can't believe it's that. And they're so young, they just, man, anything that's wrapped, even if it's a blade of grass, it's there. I say, okay, well, here's the thing. People are like presents. They want to be unwrapped. And we need to be as excited about getting to know people as we are excited about unwrapping people as we are about knowing what is inside of this present. And then I'll sit on the floor there, and I'll be the present, and I'm wrapped up like this. And then we'll say, okay, well, someone comes into the house, and they say, hey, how are you? And you say, I'm doing well, thank you. And then you need to unwrap it and say, how are you? Oh, no, I'm doing well, thank you. And then you need to ask them something. So how was your day? And as you're asking questions, as you're getting to know them, you're unwrapping them. And they're feeling like a present. And you're excited about the present. The present is being opened. Now, that's what we do as a devotional. Then we follow Moses' advice here on the rhythm. With that concept, then, we talk about it when we sit at home. So when we're at the dinner table, we talk about, did anyone unwrap anyone today? How did it go with unwrapping some of your friends? We talk about it when we sit down. We talk about it when we walk along the road. When I take my kids to school in the morning and we're in the car, I say, who are you going to treat like a present today? What is it that you want to know about them? What is it that you want to ask? When the babysitters come over, we say, what do you want to learn about them? What is it that you want to know about them? How are you going to unwrap them? When we lie down, we talk about it in the bed. I say, how did you feel about opening someone as a present? When we get up in the morning, it's talking about it all the time. Getting the rhythm. Our children learn through routine. But then we need to sit down with them. We need to walk with them. We need to lie down with them and get up with them and get the rhythm there and teach them God's ways. Not in a day, but daily, incrementally, step by step as we're helping them know the Lord. Number 5, final one, we'll close with that. Widen the circle. To wrap up these family values, let's go back to the beginning of the text. Right in the beginning, he says these interesting words. He says, Hear, O Israel. To whom is Moses speaking? He is speaking to all of Israel about the importance of passing on their faith to the next generation. In other words, he is talking to every parent. He is talking to every leader, but I don't believe he's only talking to every parent and to every leader, but he's talking to the community as a whole, to every sibling, to every aunt, to every uncle, to every grandparent, to every cousin, to the whole of Israel. What does that mean for us today? that it is the whole of the church needs to help the next generation know the Lord. And we as parents must widen the circle of getting other adults involved in our children's lives. Now, this goes against our very nature and our culture, because our culture operates differently. How our culture operates is very simple. There is clear lines of separation in our culture. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. We've seen this in a family and youth ministry. When we have our devotionals, what happens is people arrive, and what do you get? You get two groups. One is the parents, and you get another group, and it's the children. We need to merge these groups. Meaning, what we've been talking to the parents about is go and fellowship with the kids, guys. Fellowship with them. They, the next generation. If we don't reach the next generation, then we have failed in what God has called us to do. It doesn't help I help my neighbor, but not my own kid. I'm not saying we shouldn't help the neighbor. Let's help the neighbor, but the first priority is, let's help the kid. But you're, O Israel. Here's a challenge I want to give us as a congregation. Include the children. Who of you guys were out at that party last weekend, the Saturday night that we had here? Wasn't it great to see the kids on the dance floor? I mean, it was labor and toil. My, what do you call these things in English? Cater. What's that in English? Calves. Okay. My calves were hurting, man, because I had my daughter on my shoulder, and is dancing and dancing. One of them had blisters. Okay. Danced till she bled. Loved it. They loved it. I looked at it, and I looked at everything, and I saw some single guys visiting, and I saw as they checked out the crowd, and I must have thought to themselves, who are these people? Because this is weird. We don't see that in the world, do we? In the world, it's all the parents together, all the teens together, all the students together. And yes, we need individual time in those groups as well, but we need to be a church where it is God's whole family together. And it's going to take us as the adults to reach out to the children. Here's the challenge I want to give you. Reach out to each other's children. I'm not talking about trying to convert them. I'm talking about getting to know them. Here's what happens commonly. People come over for lunch. What do? We sit at the table, and the children either sit at the one end of the table and nobody talks to them, or they sit in another room. Or they play outside. Is that the family? Is that the community? Shouldn't it be that when we sit around the table that we are talking to the children? Well, I'm not comfortable talking to children. Well, I'm not comfortable doing a lot of things. Get over the discomfort. But reach out to them. How hard is it to just ask a five-year-old, how was your day? And then they sheepishly and shyly say, draw them out. Get to know them better. And don't be weird. Don't do it all in one shot and overwhelm them. It could just be high. It's just get on their level when you talk to little kids. It's just get on their level. When it's teenagers, get on their level. Figure out what floats their boats. But I think we don't even notice the kids. That's what's going to happen right now. We're going to be done here in about a minute. Okay? We're going to be done here. Then, some people are actually going to forget their kids next door. Others are going to go and get the kids, and we go home immediately without them fellowshipping with the rest of us. Others are going to bring the kids in here, and then we're going to see them as little irritations, running around on the stage, playing with the equipment that they shouldn't do, jumping off of places they shouldn't, and just putting their iPods in their ears and disappearing off into no man's land. Why? Because we're not fellowshipping with them. Widen the circle. Widen the circle. Here, O Israel. Oh, the whole Cape Town Church of Christ. I know this is something most probably new for us, but let's embrace it. Let us get to know each other's children. Now again, take heed. Do not be weird. Especially with my children. People treat the minister's child funny. Do not be weird. Don't now go and stand in a queue. Or if you're not connecting, realize you're not connecting and work on your connection. But don't try and make something fit that doesn't fit with whoever. But you guys get what I'm saying. Try. Work it out. Progress little steps. widen the circle. Those things, if we get them in our DNA as a congregation and we're just able to always keep the end in mind wherever we work, live, and play, money, time, energy, and we start saying as a congregation, man, let's align it with that and let our children see it as that. If we go for the heart and we tell them, listen here, man, it's God saves me and God can be trusted, that's why we embrace this as a family. If we make it personal and they see mom and dad not perfect, but going after it, and they see mom and dad wanting it for themselves, and we create that rhythm, and we widen the circle, can you guys imagine what will happen? It won't happen overnight. It will be day by day, year by year, but 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, we'll see our children, we'll see our neighbors, we'll see our friends know God. Because we decided on the 7th of November, 2010, that we will heed to what God says. Amen. Let's close out with the word of prayer.